1-1 pitch, swing and a drive. Deep to right field, way up there, way out of here. Goodbye, baseball.
Eight strikeouts for the King tonight and make it 23 consecutive scoreless innings for Felix.
Strike three called on the outside corner, and there it is.
It's time for the Seattle Mariners Baseball Podcast.
Kyle Seager, that just happened. Thank you very much.
Now, here's your host, Gary Hill.
And welcome back to the Seattle Mariners Baseball Podcast. Oh, it's a big day. Love this day. The day pitchers and catchers report. And so it begins. We're going to celebrate this exciting day in grand fashion. Chris Woodward's going to be by. I always love hearing from Chris Woodward. He's fantastic. He visited the Hot Stove Show. That's coming up. Also, they had a nice conversation with John Paul Morosi, who's a great baseball writer, national writer, get a national perspective on the Mariners. And coming up in just a minute, chat with Aaron Goldsmith. I thought this would be a good way to celebrate pitchers and catchers reporting. It's an idea we've been tossing around for the last few weeks, and we finally put it on tape. So we are throwing out our big Mariners predictions this season. Big and bold Mariners predictions this season. So great podcast. Glad you're here. And what is a fantastic day as a season. It feels like it begins today, right? It feels like it begins today with pitchers and catchers.
To the sixth, all even at two, and for the play-by-play, here's Aaron.
They're booing me, Rick.
Not you.
That was right on cue.
If they knew you, they would never boo you, buddy.
1-2 pitch, swing and a miss. Oh, did he get tied up? That was dirty from Felix.
Picks up the dirties, washes them, and brings them back fresh.
And we got Aaron Goldsmith here, hair just glistening in the sunlight, so it's pretty distracting.
I'm a happily married man with a child on the way, and I love King Perry. That is me in a nutshell, and I talk about the Mariners on the radio every night, so
kind of let it eat.
Oh, breaking news, the bees are still there. You look up above the mound, and it looks like you're staring up to the mothership, like you could be beamed up at any moment. That white roof with all the circles and the scaffolding.
Way out of here to right field! Thank you very much!
Well, here we go. Pitchers and catchers report today. And we get to welcome in one of our favorites. It's Aaron Goldsmith, play-by-play announcer for the Seattle Mariners. Aaron, I don't think I've ever told you this, but if I ever run for office, my platform is to make opening day and pitchers and catchers reporting a national holiday. That's my only platform. That's all I'm bringing to the table, but that's what I think should happen. Opening day, pitchers and catchers, these should be national holidays.
Yeah, you're channeling your inner Ozzie Smith there, G-Man.
Oh, well, I did a flip,
the
right?
Wizard
I did
was, a flip was trying to do that, at least with opening day, a year or two ago. But to have both be national holidays, you're breaking new ground there. I like where your head's at.
I love pitchers and catchers. The day that it finally feels like it's starting after all the winter, all the moves, everything we've been watching closely. It's finally starting to happen, and I just can't wait. Cannot wait.
This is the season, is it not, Gary? I mean, this is like, if you're a Mariners fan, you haven't been this amped up for pitchers and catchers and for opening day in how long? Well over a decade.
Yeah. No, I think you're absolutely right. I think the expectations are really high, and for good reason. For really good reason. In fact, that leads us perfectly into what we're going to talk about. We've been going back and forth on this for a while, this idea for a while. We have not revealed our list to one another, so we will both be surprised and probably awed in most cases about what we're going to write down. These are our big and bold predictions for the Seattle Mariners this season. If I had applause, I'd play it right there, but I don't have applause, but this is going to be fun. So we both put together our lists. We have not revealed
which we have
lists.
Not revealed to each other.
Yeah. Mine's in no particular order. I have no from...
I'll tell you. I'm going kind of from like more kind of layup type things.
Okay.
Into the alley-oops.
I can do that.
Into the buzzer beaters. Okay.
I like that. Okay. Well, you're the guest. So why don't you go first? You lead off. What's your first big and bold prediction for this season.
Okay. This is the most basic one that I have. It's a storyline that I was eager to start tracking since last winter, and I hope to be tracking it for eight more seasons after this. I want to know how many years in Cano's 10-year contract will the Mariners finish with more wins than the New York Yankees. Last year, the Mariners had three more wins than the Yankees. I contend the Mariners will once again have more wins than the Yankees this year. So my first bold prediction, Mariners, more wins than the New York Yankees, and Cano making the Mariners a better team than the guys in pinstripes. So that's my first bold prediction.
That is excellent. I like that. That's really good. What a way to start.
Wouldn't that be great? Wouldn't it be great if Cano's with the Mariners for all 10 years, and eight of those 10 years the Mariners have better wins and loss record than the Yankees?
I think Mariner fans would absolutely love that for a lot of reasons.
Absolutely.
I think that'd be outstanding. That's good. That's a perfect way to lead off. So here's mine.
All right.
Félix Hernández wins his second straight Cy Young Award. Oh, wait. No, I can't go with that one. Now, here's my Félix Hernández one. He becomes the 12th pitcher ever to have seven or more 200-plus, 200-strikeout innings, 200-strikeout seasons. 200-plus innings. Twelfth pitcher ever to have seven or more seasons of 200-plus innings, 200-plus strikeouts. And to add to it, it would be his seventh in a row. It would tie Roger Clemens and Walter Johnson for the second longest streaks. Tom Seaver has the longest streak with nine. Clemens, Johnson, Félix, Seaver. That's the company when we're talking at the end of the season that Félix Hernández will join after this year. That's my first big and bold prediction.
That's a Hall of Fame list. And Gary, you went right at it, man. You're not messing around. I feel like my first bold prediction was far less bold than yours was. But
I love yours.
I say that. I say that, but Félix is turned into Mr. Automatic in those regards, so I understand what you're saying.
Mine's actually not bold at all. It comes with really cool numbers, but it's really...
I think maybe that's what it is. The numbers are clouding my judgment
right now. Yeah. But thank you. I appreciate that.
Okay, now I'm going to... I love that prediction. I'm going to stay true to my list, to my scripted plays, if you will, because your prediction there makes me want to kind of leapfrog ahead. Mm. But I'm going to stick to my list because my second prediction is in line with a name that you just mentioned. So my second bold prediction is that Félix will pitch in the postseason this year, and I'll dovetail it with the second one. I'll kind of combine two for one. The Mariners win at least 90 games this season.
Nice.
Félix in the postseason, 90 wins for the M's. Keep in mind, 90 wins for the Mariners has happened only five times in franchise history. So I like where those two go together. Félix in the playoffs in October. Can you imagine what that would feel like at Safeco Field? And 90 wins for the Mariners. So there you go.
Okay, so I'll give you mine then that ties into that. Mariners win the AL West is my prediction.
Like it.
So they'll be in the postseason.
I like
that. I really think they're going to win the division this year. And the sense I'm getting is I'm not alone in terms of national media. They are becoming the popular pick. But I really think Mariners win the AL West, which means, of course, Félix will be pitching in the postseason. So I agree with you on all fronts.
I dig it. I'm right there with you on the West. I did not put that down, but I'm right there with you. So I'm going to stick with the Félix trend here.
Okay.
This season, Gary, will be a very historic one for Félix in terms of where he ranks in franchise history. If these numbers bear, I think they will. I think that at the end of this season, Félix will move into first all-time in Mariners franchise history in starts, in strikeouts, and in wins. So three categories. The starts are going to be the easiest. He needs 21 starts to become the all-time franchise leader. The strikeouts play into what you were saying. He needs 211 strikeouts to surpass Randy Johnson. I think that's going to happen. And then in terms of the wins, okay, Félix has never won even 20 games, right, his most was 19. He needs 21 wins in order to bypass Jamie Moyer, now Mariners wow. Hall of Famer. So it's Felix is at .125 right now. Big units at .130. Moyer is at .145. So 20 wins to tie Moyer, 21 to surpass. I think the run support will be there this year for Felix. I think the Mariners' offense is going to be significantly better. I think we all agree on that. So Felix, first all-time Mariners history, starts, strikeouts, and wins. Those are some big milestones.
We have mapped out a monster year for the King. He's getting a
no
lot
doubt about
done.
It.
That's great. I tied to that. I think he's going to lead the team in strikeouts, but that's not my big prediction. My big one is James Paxton will be second on the team in K's, and he'll be one of the four Mariners All-Stars at the break.
Oh, I like it. I was thinking about doing an All-Star number prediction. I like it. So you're going with four.
Yeah.
Okay. I like that. Now, I've got something that plays into that perfectly with Paxton and strikeouts. If you can believe it, never in Mariners franchise history has the season ended with two Mariners pitchers having logged at least 200 strikeouts.
Wow.
I think that changes this year. We know that the King is good for 200.
Uh-huh.
And I think between Kuma and Paxton, I think one of those guys gets 200 punch-outs. Kuma was just a handful of strikeout shy a couple of years ago. He made a little bit of a run for the Cy Young. But this is the first time in franchise history the Mariners have two pitchers with at least 200 strikeouts.
Wow.
It's going to happen.
That's great. I would have guessed that would have happened somewhere along the line, whether it be a Johnson, Facera, or something over time that would have happened. That's good stuff. Well done. Okay. I'm going to turn to offense here.
I like it. That's where I was going next, too. So, you're going to take my secret thunder here. I can feel it, Gary.
Okay.
I can feel it.
We'll see. He's going to make his second straight All-Star team. He
okay.
will collect more than the one MVP vote he got this past season. And he's going to lead all qualified AL third baseman and OPS.
Oh, that's very detailed, and I like that, G-Man. That's a good one. My Seager prediction this year is another one that kind of history of the Seattle Mariners. The Mariners have never had a third baseman with 30 and 100 ribbies. Until 2015 when Kyle Seager does it.
Oh, nice. That's
it's a monster season
that
for,
is
for
a
Big
Steve. Monster
C.
season.
If you look at third baseman all-time, Jim Presley, most single-season home runs, 27 back in 1986. Most RBIs all-time for Mariners third baseman that same season, .107. All right, so Presley had the RBIs, triple digits, but did not have the home runs. Now, Seager, four RBIs last year, shy of 100, seven home runs, shy of 30. I think the power numbers continue to get better. Seager had 25 homers last year, five shy. The power numbers continue to get better for Seager. I think he can make the jump, five more home runs. The RBIs will follow. Seager, the first ever Mariners third baseman, 30 homers, 100 ribbies.
Okay, that's great. I have one tied in to this. There were only 9 American League hitters this past season with 100 RBIs or more. This year, the Mariners will have 2 hitters over 100 RBIs. So it's a pretty exclusive club. That's what I'm trying to map out there.
But we don't have a prediction as to who those will be. We're just leaving it open-ended.
Yeah, I'm leaving myself some wiggle room. There's some different candidates there, so
all right, Gary, I like that. I like 2 guys with 100 ribbies. And, in fact, I also had a bold prediction that was very similar to that. I think that this will be the first time since 2006 the Mariners will have 2 players with at least 30 home runs.
Whoa. Oh.
It's going to happen. Forget about Safeco Field. Forget about the Marine layer. Forget about the pitcher's ballpark. I don't want to hear it. Now, Gary, you are as good of a – Mariners encyclopedia, as I know. Can you guess the last time the Mariners had 2 30 home run hitters?
96?
More recently than that.
Oh, really?
Much, much more recently than that, as a matter
30?
Of fact. Yeah.
Oh.
30 bombs. I know I'm putting you on the spot here. This is not very kind. But I figured if anybody was I say this, I looked it up. So that's especially not fair. I'll tell you.
Okay,
you ready for this?
Yeah, yeah.
The last time it happened was in 2006. Raul and Richie Sexton.
Richie Sexton.
That's 34.
Right. 34.
So
okay.
I've already told you my Seager prediction, so that obviously means that Big Sigs is going to be one of the 30 home run hitters.
Sure.
Cruz could be right there. And I would not be – this is kind of tangential to all this. I wouldn't be surprised at all. I really wouldn't. It's Zunino hit 30 bombs.
Wow, yeah.
I mean, he's got – it's a big jump. He had about, 22 last year? So that's a fairly noticeable jump, but it wouldn't surprise me.
It's not
because,
a massive jump, yeah. I mean, for a guy that young, that's not unheard of.
Yeah. So, Mariners, two guys, 30 home runs. It's happening this
Sexton
year.
Sexton and Ibanez. That's good. That's a good piece of trivia right there. Okay. Since we're talking about home runs, Seth Smith will be the second Mariners right fielder since Jay Buhner to hit 16 or more homers in a season. Jose Guillen in 2007, the other one. Seth Smith. 16 or more homers this season.
Wow. That's it. I mean, that's what we're talking about for home runs in right field for the Mariners.
Yeah.
Very interested to see how that right field works out. And I mean that with an optimistic tone.
Oh, yeah.
I think that acquisition is becoming more and more popular, I think the more and more people will have a chance to kind of let it sink in. That was big. I mean, Cruz is the biggest one, we all know, but you need complementary pieces, and that fills a big hole. So I like that. That's a good prediction.
I like that platoon a lot in right field. Between Smith and Ruggiano, I think that can really, really work out.
You know, Gary, it's not a platoon, Gary. If you ask, don't tell Jack or Lloyd.
I know. I know.
Can we come up with a different name for it?
We should.
Would that be a possibility?
I mean, of course.
Can we call it timeshare?
I don't think platoon is a bad word. Timeshare, that could work. We might need something even more Cody than that. You know what I mean?
I do. What could it be? I think, because whatever it is, I want to have Lloyd's office full of media members when I ask him. During the first homestand, Lloyd, how do you think the co-opportunity playing time between Ruggiano and Smith is working out so far?
I like it. That's good.
So we need to come up with something there.
It's not a platoon. No, that's good.
Okay, here's my last bold prediction. And I haven't really kind of figured out the language for it. It's kind of more of just a feeling that you can't really necessarily – you need more than just one number to back up. But I think you'll probably agree with this. Now that Lester has moved on to greener grass at Wrigley Field, I am positive that when this season is over with, James Paxton will be viewed upon as one of the top three left-handed starting pitchers in the American League.
Nice.
And the only two guys that can be better – I mean, Chris Sale,
who's
just ridiculous. And, of course, David Price, who last year just struck everybody out and pitched pretty deep into games to boot. So I think you're looking at Paxton, Sale, and Price as the big three lefties that you just want no part of in the American League.
Well, if that comes to pass, think about the Mariners' rotation. I mean – Felix.
Yeah, I know, you're exactly right.
You know what I mean? Felix Iwakuma Paxton, that's dirty.
Yeah, you know, that leads to a point. I was asked the other day if I thought that if it would be the pitching that would be better this year or the offense that would be better this year. And after I thought about it for about a second, don't you think, Gary? I mean, it's both that will be better. They will both be better. I mean, you will now have a number three starter. You now have Hap as well. Walker or Elias holding things down at the end of the rotation. I mean, if you get Paxton and Iwakuma for a full season and the bullpen does even 80% of what it did last year, your pitching is better.
Yeah.
And the offense is obviously, if all things bear out to expectations, the offense will be notably better. So you're looking at better in both regards, which is thrilling from a fan's perspective.
Okay, speaking of better in both regards, I'll hit you with my last two. One offense, one pitching. Jay Happ, his ERA at Safeco Field will be under 3.
Whoa. Now, do you happen to be privy of his lifetime numbers? At, I know you looked these up, I'm sure you're right. At Safeco Field?
Well, ironically, last year he had a 10 ERA. I mean, yeah, it's like 10 or something. It's just, it's massive. So, yeah, I realize the leap I'm taking. Granted, he hasn't pitched there all that often.
But sure, that's a fair point.
Yes,
that's great.
I'm taking a little bit of a leap. I realize that.
I set you up for the slam dunk, and it was massively rejected. But
right.
That's good.
Okay, here's my other one. I think you might like this one. So, last year, the average Major League Baseball average was .251. So that's what Major League hitters hit last year as a whole, average .251. That's the worst batting average since 1972. So .251.
Oh.
I'm putting this in context because my big bold prediction is Brad Miller is going to hit above .265 for the season, which, as you can see, is well above average. So there you go.
That would be huge. That would be incredible. I like that. Gary, I've thought of one more. On July 31st, the Mariners will send out a press release announcing the following two trades.
Oh, I thought about one of these too. If you say the guy I'm thinking of, I'll laugh hysterically. Okay, go ahead.
The Mariners will acquire two players at the trade deadline.
Okay.
Alex Rodriguez and Ichiro Suzuki coming back to Seattle. They're going to win co-World Series MVPs. A-Rod's reputation restored. He's going to be on the lead float in the parade. He's going to be showering the fans with handwritten thank you notes. And Ichiro is just going to be Ichiro the whole time and wear a very fancy silver hat of some kind. I think Ichiro and A-Rod, G-Man, are going to lead the Mariners to the promised land. It's going to be great. And then of course, Pinello is going to come out and co-manage.
Sure. Yeah, why not? Why not? That's awesome. That's not the direction I was – that's not the direction I saw you going.
Now, this is interesting because I have also thought about realistic trade deadline because I was wondering if I should go that direction here. What is the name that you were thinking of?
So here's the name that I think could be a possibility for a few different reasons. One is I think Baltimore is not going to be as strong this year as they were last year. I think at the deadline they could be looking to deal. I think Chris Davis is going to bounce back, you know, not to where he was 2 years ago, but better than last year. He's a free agent after the end of the year. I think he could be a sought-after middle-of-the-order bat for a team that's in contention. And so I'm just putting it out there that Chris Davis, one to watch, see if he does bounce back, a Baltimore team to watch, because he is a guy that if a team needs a little pop at first base or DH or whatever at the deadline, he could help supply it.
I like that. Boy, you talk about a team that needs him desperately.
Yeah, big
time. The Orioles, the whole East, I'll be interested to see what the Red Sox look like, the Blue Jays. We go into every season of the Blue Jays, feel like they're going to win the World Series.
I know.
With what they've done. But the Orioles, man, that's a team that they're going to have a hard time being close to what they were last year, it seems like. Now, the name that came to my mind as far as a trade it's a pessimistic thing because it would essentially mean that somebody with the Mariners wouldn't be obviously playing very well. But when I take a look at somebody that you would think any team in contention would want to have on their team pushing for the playoffs, I know he's now in the division, but Ben Zobrist is the guy that comes to mind.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And now, I think Billy Beane will wheel and deal anybody anywhere if he gets what he wants in return. I think if there's a guy that the whole in division wouldn't really mean quite as much to, it might be Billy Beane. But if the A's aren't looking too good, if they're not on the path that Billy Beane wants them to be, and if the Mariners need some help there, I think Zobrist is a guy that, hey, you can win with Zobrist. That's a guy you want to have around for a lot of different reasons. So that's somebody that I'll be very interested to see how his season with the A's goes. And, of course, how the A's season goes, because that will impact what playoff things are looking like for the Mariners.
No doubt. Yeah, and a guy that can fill a lot of spots. Yeah, the A's team is going to be really interesting to watch. Well, I feel like we've done good work here. I feel good about what we've done here on the first day of pitchers pitchers and catchers report. I feel good about this.
I got one more bold prediction for you, Gary.
Okay.
Robinson Cano will have more at-bats than his counterpart, Jurickson Profar, with the Texas Rangers.
Ah, well, that's a prediction.
Boy.
I wouldn't call that big or bold. Wow.
How brutal is that?
You know, and I was thinking about it from the Rangers' perspective, just when you're assuming that all these guys are going to come back healthy and, I mean, right out of the chute, they lose Profar.
It's like, welcome to the Twilight Zone.
Yeah.
I mean, seriously, it's just, it's like they haven't skipped a beat. This is somebody that was being called the second coming.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? It's the curse. It's the curse of Ian Kinsler, is what this is.
Well, it could be called that. That's good.
The 0-162 didn't quite come true, but realistically about as close as you could have thought.
Yeah. No, you're right. You're right about that. And this season,
I
predicted the Astros are going to finish ahead of somebody in the division, and it may just be the Texas Rangers.
Wow. These will not be the same Astros that we've seen before. They've spent some money for the first time in a while.
I think they had a quality offseason. They still have a ways to go, but I think they had a quality offseason.
I'm with you. No, I think that's well put. And, boy, I would have been surprised if they didn't finish last, just because I really have been thinking that even though the Rangers had such a terrible season last year, hey, you bring everybody back healthy.
Mm-hmm.
If the big three of Beltre, Fielder, and Chu can play at least just well enough, you're not going to finish in last place, certainly.
Right.
But, man, they're not trending in the right direction all of a sudden. But you look at the division now. Hamilton missing spring training.
Mm-hmm.
Doolittle, an all-star closer, same story for him. And now Profar may be out for the entire season. From a health standpoint, the West is not in too good a shape, and pitchers and catchers reporting just now today. So
yeah, I know.
Good things for a number of teams already in the West.
Well, we
I like what we did here, Gary.
I do too.
This is good.
We'll
do
more on the division coming up too, but this is a strong start to spring training.
This is great. We're welcoming in one of the best writers covering Major League Baseball today. He is calling us from beautiful Ann Arbor, Michigan. Go Blue. John Paul Morosi. JP, how are you, my friend?
Doing great. Doing better than the Wolverines. They're not looking too good against the Spartans tonight here a few miles away. So this is obviously, guys, I got to tell you, Seattle's one of the most beautiful cities in the world, as you well know. And this time of year in Michigan, certainly as the temperature gauge on the car yesterday was at about 0 or a degree at times, makes you definitely appreciate the coming of spring training even more.
How warm is it? A degree. That's depressing.
It was 8 degrees last night. We're all up to 16 right now, which is basically a heat wave. People were going outside in shirt sleeves to the grocery store tonight. It was like we're in the Florida Keys. So that was a big time improvement over last night.
Iced teas all around. Well, that's good to hear. JP, it's going to be fun to talk with you here for a few minutes about the Mariners and this offseason. And one of the really interesting storylines probably around baseball this offseason is a number of teams that have not been to the postseason in a long, long time, retooling, whether that be in the front office, in the managerial chair, or with the players on the field, and now expectations. Two of those teams have something in common, and that is Lou Piniella was the last manager to guide them into October. That is the Cubs, and that is the Mariners. What are you thinking right now about the Mariners and a quest for the postseason? Because certainly here in Seattle, we are all thinking that this has got to be the year, that if they don't make the playoffs, expectations are such that it will truly be a disappointment.
Yeah, and I think that's really a tribute to what Jack Cerenzik has done and what Lloyd McClendon has done, certainly in Lloyd's already brief but pretty successful tenure there with the Mariners. I think the moves overall this offseason, you look at them in their totality, and I think obviously Cruz, we know what he can do, driving in runs. But I really like the Seth Smith move. I think that's the kind of guy you get when you're right there on the cusp, because he can do so many different things. He can hit quality right-handed pitching. You can move him around the outfield if you have to. And I think I was just looking at the Mariners' lineup, projected lineup earlier tonight, and I like the balance. I like the way it's lengthened out. You move Ackley down lower, a spot where maybe he's more comfortable. Zunino obviously can give you some run production from the bottom part of the lineup. So I think when you look at it all, it also gives you then the advantage if Lloyd wants to mix and match there with Miller and Taylor at shortstop, or if he wants to play Taylor, if he feels better about that defensively, you can bat him ninth and feel like you get enough production from the rest of the lineup to play him and carry that bat at shortstop. So I think when you look at the big picture, Aaron, I really like the way this roster really balances out. Of course, Hap, he's obviously a good back end lefty starter. Of course, Safeco is a good place for him to pitch from that standpoint. So you look at everything, and I just like the balance of this team. I think this is probably the most balanced Mariners team they've had probably in more than a decade. And I think when you look at the rest of the AL West, you have to like their chances to be right there at the finish as they were this past year, and then probably and maybe even get over the top and win the division.
John, I think there are a lot of people that in Seattle, they've been following the Mariners for a long time, and obviously it's been a rough more than few years. And I think they're a little bit in shock when they see so many of the projections coming out, having the Mariners at the top in the AL, New York at the top in the AL, projecting 89, 90 wins, the West, whatnot. There have been a number of projection systems. There have been a number of national analysts who have all had them at the top. How do you explain when people who have not been here, who have been more of the national scene, who kind of look at the bigger picture and the on-paper picture, what is it that kind of puts the Mariners over the top and puts them into that conversation?
Well, I think it's two things, Shannon. I think, number one, the Mariners are getting better, and I think the rest of the division, I don't know if I can say they're getting worse, but I think it's maybe not quite as competitive as it was even a couple of years ago. I think the Angels, you look at what they did this past year with all the questions about Hamilton, he really hasn't panned out there, and C.J. Wilson hasn't really panned out there, and yet they won as many games as they won, led the American League in wins. I feel like they're going to regress this year. I don't have that confidence in them. Obviously, Pujols getting older, Freeze at third base, you know, he's had injury issues over the past few years. They're going to go with Rutledge at second. That's a question mark. So I feel like the Angels will probably come back a little bit to the pack this year. Meanwhile, the A's, of course, they look like they're kind of in a transitional year, rebuilding a little bit. Of course, they'll have a youth at shortstop. Not a lot of power at all in the outfield with Fold and Crisp and Reddick. DH is going to be Butler. Not a lot of power there. Texas still coming back from all their injuries. I think their rotation has a chance to be a little bit better than what you think with Gallardo coming in. I think he'll be fine. But Houston not quite ready to win yet. So you look around, and I sort of agree with that thought process of 90 wins for the Mariners being very realistic. I like the Mariners, and I don't know I really like anybody else in the division more than I like Seattle. I think when you take it all into perspective, and the other thing we haven't really touched on yet, Shannon, is the bullpen. I think Seattle, the Mariners are going to win the winnable games because for the most part, obviously, maybe a couple changes here and there, but for the most part, that same cast is coming back. And I think it was very deep. You saw guys like, Carson Smith came in, Medina. You like what they can do. Leon was very good. Farquhar, I think, is a very good setup guy. So you like what the overall depth of the Mariners have right there. So I think it's a very balanced bullpen that'll be able to protect a lot of the leads that I think the improved offense is going to get for the Mariners.
John, with the A's, and I've been trying to figure out what they have tried to do this winter, and you talked about the Angels, but the West overall, where do you think they rank with the Central in the East? We've talked about the West the last few years being a very tough division, but with some of the injuries the Angels have had, and, of course, Texas, everybody was hurt last year. Where does the West, do you think, rank amongst the other divisions?
That's a great question, Mike. I think if I were to say right now, I think the most balanced, deepest division in the AL is the Central, because I think you have four teams that you feel really good that, you know what, this team could probably win the division. You can make a pretty strong case. The Tigers, of course, have won four in a row. The Royals, of course, got to within one swing of winning it all this past year. The White Sox, vastly improved. And the Indians, I think they were a quietly very good team this past year. Brantley finishing in the top three in the MVP vote. Kluber, of course, winning the Cy Young. And I think they have a very good balanced team with a lot of switch hitters. Tough to pitch to. I think Chisenhall's getting better and better. I think Kipnis will bounce back. You got a couple of young shortstops they can go to there, Lindor being one of them. But I think the Indians are going to continue to get better. They haven't really made a lot of moves this wintertime, but I think they're a very good club already. So I think the Central probably has the edge, and I would probably say the West and the East are pretty similar. The West might even be ahead of the East. The East, to me, is a confusing division because there's not that strong front-running team there, and I think the Yankees are very vulnerable. I'm afraid just thinking about their spring training. If all of a sudden Tanaka has a bad bullpen session one day, we know he's pitching with a partial tear already. If he has Tommy John at some point in time, CeCe's coming back off a knee surgery. I don't know that they really have enough horses to stay with the other teams in the division, even with the division being diminished. I think Toronto probably this is kind of great. We're talking about this because you could actually make the case. Seattle's got as good of a chance as anybody to win the West, and Toronto might actually be the front runner in the East, two of the teams with the longest droughts in the American League from a playoff standpoint. So I think it's great for the game that things are balancing out a little bit, but you know, Baltimore, of course, they lost Cruz, they lost Markakis. So I think there's a lot of questions about a lot of those teams in the East, and I would probably put the West maybe even ahead of the East at this point in time.
It's a real pleasure to be talking with John Paul Morosi of Fox Sports. And JP, if we could kind of zoom out a little bit and go bigger picture on the game right now. Obviously, there's a new signature on Major League Baseball's these days as Rob Manfred has taken over as commissioner. And I know you've had a chance to spend some time with Commissioner Manfred already, and he appears to be an incredibly likable guy. My goodness, I mean, his interviews, he is so loquacious, and there seems to be no veil of secrecy there in many ways. And he has come out and has made some proclamations on some things that he wants to see done differently in the game. He's backpedaled a little bit, like on the shifts. But overall, what have been your impressions on Commissioner Manfred and kind of where he wants to take this game overall?
Well, I think, Aaron, it's a great question, and I think he really is taking a very holistic, open-minded approach to baseball, which I think is the right thing that I think overall has to happen. And if you look at the different things that are on the table right now, because as you pointed out, most everything is on the table right now in terms of being open-minded about changes to the game, they're all getting steered towards making the product better and making the time you spend watching a major league game include the best action it possibly can. When you talk about the pace of play is an issue. We're not going to see a pitch clock, but I do think we'll see some modifications in terms of being ready to play once we come back from commercial break, a foot staying in the batter's box throughout the course of an at-bat. That's all aimed at having more action over the course of the time you spend with the baseball game. The strike zone being talked about, as Jeff Passan reported from Yahoo, about that possibly changing for 2016. Again, that's maybe taking more 1-2 counts and making them 2-1 counts, incentivizing more action, putting the ball in play, better contact, stronger contact, as opposed to maybe the weaker emergency hacks that we see increasingly these days because of all the power arms. And then finally, the notion of opening the game up to more people around the country, more people around the world, certainly working more in minority communities in the U.S., working with the NCAA to improve what has really been a very restrictive scholarship situation that's really reduced the number of excellent athletes in our game. That's the other thing. We want to make sure that the athletes on the field are the best possible athletes we can get in the U.S. and around the world to play baseball. So all these things are moving in the same direction of making the product more enjoyable, I think, for somebody at home, somebody at the ballpark. And I think it's important to really look at that holistic approach that I think Rob's taken already. So I think so far a very, very good start, I think, for Rob Manfred as the commissioner.
John Paul, I think you know that the off season, I always call it the not so off season, because it just, there really is no such thing, especially for you that is covering
right.
all of baseball. Now we've got the added twist of just when you think it's all done, now you open up Cuba, a lot of players are available. What kind of impact is that going to have, not just this year, but in the coming years?
Well, Shannon, it's fascinating, and I'm glad you brought it up, because I think it's one of those topics that you talk to people in baseball, and the real hardcore scouts and the fans and the people that really follow the industry, this is something that is fascinating to discuss. And to back up a little bit, the reason we're seeing so many great athletes come out of Cuba, and this is kind of a good discussion to have and think about our country, it's because basically all the best athletes in that country play baseball. So that's why they have so many talented players, is because everybody there plays the game. And so I think, if we had everybody playing baseball here, we'd have probably, you could multiply Cuba's population times 20, and there you'd have that number of players probably coming out of the U.S. But I think it's an interesting discussion, because we don't really know yet exactly where this is going. We don't know if it's going to be fully normalized. We don't know how long it's going to take. Obviously, there's some political questions that people more qualified than us are going to have to answer on that whole dynamic. But I think that what people, as they think about the way this could go, I think there is that possibility of having something resembling the posting system, where maybe a fee is paid to the Cuban government in exchange for allowing players to leave and then go back. That's probably the most logical situation if, in fact, everything totally normalizes, because obviously there's a lot of complexities that go on there. I don't think we're going to see the pure free agency aspect where we have academies there, just because I think there's always going to be some degree of governmental control about who actually leaves and when. But I think that market is opening up. And the thing that I think it's important for us to remember, Shannon, is we hear from some people, oh, well, Puig is there now, and Castillo's there now, and Tomas is there now, and oh, so who's left? Well, a lot of guys are left. Yoan Moncada obviously is going to make a lot of money. A lot of excitement about Hector Oliveira. I saw a report today from Peter Gammons. He might get more than $60 million or so. So the players are still coming. And I was actually at the Caribbean Series just a couple weeks ago in San Juan, Puerto Rico. There were a few players on that team in the Caribbean Series for the Cuban team that had the scouts there buzzing. So there was plenty of talent still there. And whenever it comes to be that things open up a little bit more, I'm telling you, we're going to see even more Cuban players than we've already seen, probably equaling the number of Dominican players in Major League Baseball. So there's going to be a tremendous influx of talent there, already more than what we've seen to this point.
John Paul, it's a real pleasure. We appreciate you taking some time out of your night there in Ann Arbor and joining us here in Seattle. And we look forward to seeing you down the road, maybe in Detroit at some point this season. Thanks for hopping on with us.
I got to tell you, the Mariners, they keep getting better. So that Peoria stop for me in spring training is moving up closer and closer to the top of the list. So that's a high-priority team now in spring training.
It's interesting when I don't know if people realize this or not, but your playing days were not that long ago. I mean, you're less than like 3.5 years removed from the last time that you suited up in a major league game as a member of the Blue Jays. Were there ever days this past season where you're on the big league coaching staff and you're walking through that tunnel, you're climbing up the stairs, and you see the guys in those pearly home whites where you go, I think I might be able to suit up in one of those?
No. I'll be completely honest with myself, and I'm going to say no. Reason why I retired. Clearly, obviously, you see the skills start to diminish, and no, it was clearly time. And I'm not one of those guys that claims to still be able to do it. I can get out there with some recreational people probably and hold my own, but no, that was definitely not in my mindset as I did that. It made me feel like it, because a lot of those guys I actually played with. So that was kind of weird at times. You know, me and Saunders played together, Smoke, Ackley. A lot of those guys, you know, I had pretty good relationships with as a player, and then just kind of had to, you know, step back a little bit. And as a coach, you got to kind of keep your distance, but still maintain the same relationship.
Chris, one of the things that we saw from the staff last year, and you were a new addition to it, your position was a new addition, was all of the early work that went on. Having an infield coach, particularly with the young infielders, what kind of progress can be made within the year, and what are you able to do on a day-to-day basis to help these guys?
It was really nice for me, because I had, as a coordinator, an infield coordinator in my first year coaching, I didn't really get the opportunity to work with guys every day, because I had to kind of go around to all the different teams. So working with a guy like Brad Miller on a daily basis, it was really eye-opening for me, just to see exactly what he needs to do on a daily basis to be successful. And, you know, it, like with Seager, clearly he made a lot of strides. And, you know, you kind of, as you go along, know what to push him on and what he needs to, you know, you can kind of envision his success and where he needs to be. You know, like I said, like a guy like Brad Miller, I felt like, you know, he made a lot of progress, whether it showed up in the games or not, you know, mentally and physically. You know, he continued to work on some things, and I actually got to work with him in the off season, and he continues to work. So it's a progress. You know, it's going to go right into spring training. And, you know, a guy like Chris Taylor, you know, I know they're going to be competing. So it's fun for me to kind of just to see how good they can possibly become. And I know it takes time. Some guys progress quickly, like Seager. I mean, he progressed so quickly that it shocked me just to see how fast he was able to grasp some concepts. And then you got guys like Lomo. You know, he wants to get better. And it's just fun to watch. And, you know, now coming into this year, I got some groundwork laid. So it's a little bit easier. Last year was, you know, I kind of had to feel for what guys were capable of, what they aren't, you know, and see them actually play in games, you know, with the game on the line, see how they play under certain circumstances. And, you know, we played a lot of meaningful games, so it was good for me and it was good for the rest of the staff to kind of see how guys responded. And I think that's important in, you know, evaluating them and then telling them going into this year what it is, how we're going to handle those situations a little better or just add to what they have already done, what they've had success with.
As an infield coach, it has to be pretty cool that Kyle went out and he ended up getting the Gold Glove. So really, it's your first Gold Glove as an infield instructor, so that has to be pretty cool. And then I'm hoping the best part about it is that Kyle turns around, parlays that into a pretty big contract, gets the Gold Glove, Chris. Well, he had to get you something great. I mean, it had to be awesome.
I like where you're going with this.
and if not, I can't wait to see what's going to be showing up in spring training for you.
Honestly, it was all him. I can't take any credit. He gave, you know, me way too much credit for what he was able to accomplish. He's obviously a really good player, but what he learned, you know, the way he grasped concepts and the way he worked, I'm not surprised at all that he was able to accomplish that, and he deserved it. I mean, honestly, he's the one that comes out there and plays, so I'm not taking any credit for that. And I just kind of, you know, pushed him in the direction that, you know, and he, like I said, he grasped the concepts and he went out and did it and he performed. So I mean, it's taking guys, you know, like a Chris Taylor. I got to work with him the first year, you know, my first year coaching. He was in the minor league, so seeing him progress was, you know, was cool to me because I, you know, I had him. He was one of the first guys I had. He had just signed, and seeing him grasp the concepts and watching him kind of take off. And you know, Brad Miller, he had already been in the organization for a couple of years. But he's, you know, he's starting to grasp onto some things, and it's, I just want to see, you know, how years go by, how much they mature and how much better they can possibly get, because, you know, I think the kids are special. You know, they're not the typical, you know, big league guys that I've come across, in my career. They want to get better, and they know that this team revolves around obviously our pitching and our defense, and we could be really good defensively. Obviously, we got the pitching to do it, but I don't know. Yeah, I'm excited, obviously, to get this thing going and to see where they're at, you know, and watch them play another full year.
It's another thing that's interesting to me, and I think back to when I played and having watched the game now for a long time. You talked about Kyle and Brad and Taylor and Logan Morrison. What do you tell Cano? He makes an error. Do you go meet him at the top step and tell him what he did wrong, or how do you deal with that?
he's just special all around. The one thing I will do this year, I think he could get better. You know, every player can get better. I know Robbie's a special player, and technically, it was hard for me to find flaws technically in his ability. Because, you know, from a second base standpoint, you know, I'm just watching him take ground balls in spring training, and I'm like, this guy's, I can't tell him anything because he does everything right. And he's so smooth, and he's got no panic. He does everything you ask of an infielder. But there are certain things that, you know, I will push him to, you know, and I know he plays 160 games, but to work a little harder and get in his reads and his jumps and, you know, not take for granted that he knows what's going to happen, you know, because he's very in tune with the game. It looks like he's Joe Cool out there. But we talk a lot about, you know, where guys are going to hit and what pitches are going to be thrown and I'd like him, you know, just take it a step further, because I always think, I've told him in spring training last year that he's not only the best, but he could be one of the best second basemen of all time based on his ability, not only from an offensive standpoint, but from a defensive standpoint. He's just special. Like, he does things that no other guy can do. You know, playing that position, he's got a better arm than most shortstops. You know, but I know his range can increase just by his anticipation, you know, just anticipating what might happen. He could be better. So I'll push him. I mean, I'll do the best I can to get the most out of him. But he is special. If the ball's hit to him, you're out.
Yeah.
Bottom line.
Couple of final thoughts here with Mariners first base coach and infield coach Chris Woodward. And Chris, we mentioned at the top of this interview that your playing days aren't that long in the rearview mirror, but you played parts of about a dozen seasons in the majors with a host of different teams. We mentioned the Blue Jays, but also the Red Sox, the Braves, of course the Mariners, the Mets. Played with a lot of guys, a lot of accomplished players. When you're sitting on the porch one day with your grandkids and they're asking you questions about what it was like playing in the bigs, who's going to be the one player that you're going to tell them that you are most proud to play alongside during your time in the major leagues?
That's a good question. I've actually thought a lot about that. You know, it's hard for me to come up with, I guess, one guy. Kind of put me on the spot on that, because there's so many players.
We'll take a top three or four.
Well, let's see. I'd say from a pitching standpoint, I would say Smoltz. I only got to play with him for 1 year, but just the way he kind of handled himself was pretty impressive. You know, he was basically what I thought a Hall of Famer should be. I don't know, Carlos Delgado. I mean, I played pretty much my whole career with him. I know he doesn't. I don't think he got enough votes for the Hall of Fame, but he was pretty special. I got to watch him day in, day out for my first 5 or 6 seasons, and then played with him in New York. When he was good, he was one of the best hitters I've ever seen. Just his preparation, you know, his mental preparation and daily prep. He studied pitchers. He was like, he's a professor of hitting. That's why, you know, I see guys and how they kind of take for granted just the daily grind, and he didn't. And he was, that's why he was as good as he was. He was clearly talented, but he took the next step. And it's hard to get some young guys to understand how much preparation some of these superstars actually put in to their daily work. But I don't know, top three? I would say Smoltz and Delgado were definitely up there. I think I only got to spend a spring training with Jeter. I signed with the Yankees in 08, and that was pretty special because we got to play against each other quite a bit. But getting to just play with them in spring training for that, 2 months. It's pretty special to me.
Chris, did you ever play golf with Smoltz?
Yes, I did.
How competitive?
Yeah, he was pretty good. Oh, my gosh. He was competitive at everything. He was, I'd say, it didn't matter what you were playing. We played a lot of poker together. And, you know, at the end of the day, me and him would be the only two with money left, and he would be mad that I had more than him. You know, he'd want to play. He'd want to duel it out to see who ended up with the most. So it's just, you know, that was his nature. He always kind of pushed himself to be the best. And it was apparent, you know, not only, like I said, same thing with Delgado, Finger and Small. You know, Jeter was a little bit more, I would say, carefree, but he also kept everybody kind of in line. He didn't have to say a word. You know, he's not the biggest guy on the team. He just had a command about him, like a presence about him that was very deserving.
That's good stuff. Chris Woodward, we really appreciate the time. We're looking forward to seeing you down in the Valley of the Sun. Thanks for joining us tonight on the Hot Stove.